Oh yeah, real lifers, citizens of the world, welcome to the Real Life Global Movement, where our mission is to inspire, empower, and connect the world through English.
We believe that English should be a fun and enriching part of your life that you can practice and enjoy whenever and wherever you want. Are you tired of boring lessons that suck the life out of your learning? Are you ready to step up your game and become a kick-ass English speaker?
Well, we're here to guide and inspire you on your journey to true lifelong fluency. It's time to stop just learning English and start living it. Can I get an aw yeah? Aw
yeah! Aw yeah! Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls from every single corner of our beautiful earth, this is Ethan from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, effective, and
incredible
way to learn English. So download this podcast and listen to us while you're riding the bus, stuck in traffic, saluting the American flag, or even
doing somersaults down a hill.
Oh yeah. I'm joined here in the Cross Atlantic studio with the man who was a little bit cold, so he turned the sun up, and that's why we now have global warming, Justin Murray.
Oh yeah. What is going on, Ethan, and all of you listeners out there?
So I hear a lot of people don't believe in global warming.
It's true. It's real, and I'm sorry I caused it, but I'm going to fix it too. I'm creating solar panels as we speak.
Or maybe, you know, if you get a little bit warm, you might just turn the sun down. All right, so let's jump right into today's kick-ass quotes. We have two of them, and they are going to give you a hint about today's topic. So do you want to share the first one, J-Man?
Sure. So today we're talking about America, the land of the free, the land of many things that we will talk about today. But in America, anyone can become president, and that's the problem, by George Carlin.
Yeah, that obviously is a huge problem, as we can see. What is the meaning of that quote? Why does he say it's a problem?
One of the great things about the United States is we have this myth of the rags to riches. So first of all, I think we've talked about this in the past, but what are rags?
Rags are, they're kind of like old pieces of cloth that maybe you use to like clean or something. Or, you know, you might say if someone's clothes are really old and beaten up, you might say that they're like wearing rags.
Yeah. The rags to riches is kind of this idea, this myth of anybody can come to the United States or, you know, a poor person can be born there. And through hard work and determination, you can become rich. You can become wealthy. So that's rags to riches. And so there's social mobility in the United States. Although I think the facts show that this is becoming less and less. This was more the case after the epic of World War II, but it's becoming more and more difficult. So in America, anyone can become president. That's the problem. Who do we have as president nowadays?
We have, if you're listening to this podcast in 2017, Donald Trump is currently the president of the United States.
Yeah, that's the problem. How does that happen?
How does that happen? Well, we did a whole podcast about this a while back with Vanessa, which I can share in the show notes, which will be at reallifeglobal.com/USA. How did that happen? Guess he's a businessman, not a politician. So it proves that anyone can become president, even if they have no experience in politics.
And I guess in some sense, you know, the United States is a land where people supposedly have this social mobility, but at the same time, on the other side of this, people are easily manipulated, or maybe the media is corrupt enough to help that. But I think the media is really corrupt in most places in general.
Yeah, I think that's a very common problem all around the world, say everywhere I've lived at least. So we'll share another quote that maybe is a little bit more positive image of America. And it's, if you can dream it, you can do it, by Walt Disney. So what does that mean? If you can dream it, you can do it. And why is that such an American way of thinking?
We have this just eternal optimism in the United States, right? So if you can dream it, you can do it. It just means that the sky is the limit.
What does sky is the limit mean?
The sky is the limit is like anything's possible. The sky is the limit because look at the sky. There's no limit. It's open. Open possibilities. So if you can dream it, you can do it. The sky is the limit. And so it's just this eternal optimism that you can start your dream, go after it, expand into the future, and be successful. And I think that's definitely a big part of the American spirit too.
Yeah, that kind of can-do attitude. I think we're really famous for that.
Yeah, there's an image of, I think maybe it's post-World War II with like a woman. I think she's wearing like a hat or something, but she's all like, you can do it or we can do it. Do you remember that image?
Isn't that more of a feminist movement though?
Well, I think that's sort of the same thing. It's like really bringing that to women too. You know, that's part of American spirit as well. And that intersects with the era that really women's rights are coming into the focus as well, right?
For sure. I think we need to make an image like that with you flexing your guns and saying like, we can learn it.
You can learn it.
Referring to English.
Yes, you can. Where does that come from?
Well, yes, we can. Isn't that Obama? That was like his campaign slogan.
Exactly. And Obama, again, is like he's a crystallization of that American spirit as well, because he represents kind of that culturally, right? The first black man to become president, right? Finally, it's possible in the United States. Anything's possible, right? And he came with this intense optimism that he could really make things better.
And when I said before, a couple of things. So what's a can-do attitude?
A can-do attitude is you believe that you can do it. It's a positive attitude, right? The opposite of that would be like, if you ask me a question, if I can do something, I might say, no can do.
Exactly. No can do. So like a lot of times people, they want to hire someone who has a can-do attitude. You ask them like, can you do this? And they said, like, yeah, of course. And they're always willing to try, maybe to fail, but they're always going to try. They have that can-do attitude. And I also said like that image you were talking about, that we could make like a similar one of you flexing your guns. And what does that mean, flexing your guns?
I mean, how would you describe it, Mr. V?
I'd say flex is to like engage your muscle. And what's a gun in this case?
Your guns, like your muscles and your arms, right? Your arms.
Exactly. So if you say flexing your guns, it means you're flexing your arm muscles, kind of showing off.
You might say your cannons too, right?
Your cannons. I don't know if I've heard that as much. I think it would work. All right, so let's jump into today's shout out. We are doing a special shout out to the English learner, the kick-ass learner of the week. And this is Betty from the Fluency Circle. Betty is from Taiwan, but she has like a huge passion about American culture, about English. She's definitely one of the most persistent and dedicated English learners that I've ever seen. It's really amazing how hard she works to improve her English. So she definitely has that can-do attitude that we're talking about today. So let's roll into today's main topic, talking all about American stereotypes. What do you think?
Yeah, just really quickly, I've known Betty for a couple of years when we launched the first Real Life Global platform and spoke a lot with her on there. And I just kind of watched her grow and really adapt with her English. And you can see it when somebody gets fluent and they start adapting the culture more and more. It's pretty incredible. And I've seen her definitely like grow and evolve and really integrate that cultural aspect of the language into her own fluency. So it's been really great to see Betty. You rock. Keep up the great work. Yeah.
Now let's roll into today's main topic, talking all about American stereotypes. So might start just looking at the negative stereotypes, which you probably have heard of a lot of these. Maybe some of them are stereotypes that you even hold about Americans. And then we're going to talk about some more positive stereotypes because, you know, you can also have ways of generalizing about people that maybe are more positive. And maybe always aren't true as well, just like the negative ones. And just finish up by talking a bit about stereotypes in general and what they kind of mean. So you've lived outside of the States a lot. I've lived outside of the United States a lot. And what do people, when you encounter them, tend to kind of generalize about Americans or about people from the United States?
Well, just to summarize this in my own journey, my own growing up, and so what I've experienced, you know, I was very naive, maybe a little bit optimistic about the United States, maybe a little bit just not aware of difficulties that the United States has had with in world history, you know what I mean? And kind of some of the intentions of like international relations and stuff like this. And so I was very naive. I went to university in Colorado, same university as you, a very progressive university. And I learned like a lot of the just atrocities that the United States has committed, some of the wars we fought, the CIA and all this stuff. And so I got really, really like cynical about the United States.
What is cynical?
Cynical just means to have a really negative attitude, to see only the negative, to be very critical, overly critical of something. And I started traveling and I met a lot of people who were very extremely critical of the United States. And I tended to agree with them, I think too much. I became like very against the United States. And then later I feel like I grew up And I found that balance and I was able to recognize, okay, you know, this is all, there's a lot of truth in this, but I was denying all the good in the United States and the positive side. And I think that's important of like any country. I can see people in Brazil doing the same thing about Brazil. Some people only see the negativity in Brazil and don't recognize the positive. And so it's like, you always have those two sides. Anyways, like in my travels, some of the negative stereotypes I've experienced, there is this idea of like the ugly American, right? And I think this has been perpetuated. It's been spread, you know, over the last 50 to 100 years. Maybe it's like Europeans, maybe it's like people from the entire world, but can you describe that, Ethan? What's the ugly American?
Well, I was going to say first, I've definitely had a very similar journey to you, that when I was younger, I had a very cynical, a very negative view of the United States. And even when I first started traveling, I feel like that kind of increased it. I was like, all these other places are so much better than the US. But then, you know, getting more experience traveling more of the world, I started to really appreciate a lot of the positive things and realizing how fortunate I was to grow up in the United States, and especially to grow up in such like a beautiful part like Colorado. So it's interesting when you actually go outside of your country, you're kind of able to look back and reflect on a lot of different points, both the positive and the negative, which maybe we can talk about a little bit more before we wrap up this podcast. But anyway, I pulled the definition of an ugly American. Now, there's actually a definition of this from Wikipedia, and it says it's a pejorative term used to refer to perceptions of loud, arrogant, demeaning, thoughtless, ignorant, and ethnocentric behavior of American citizens, mainly abroad, but also at home. Although the term is usually associated with or applied to travelers and tourists, it also applies to U.S. corporate businesses in the international arena. There's probably a lot of vocabulary there that's a bit confusing, and I think it's a good lens for a lot of the different negative stereotypes.
Okay, so let's do a quick fire vocabulary, Mr. V. I'm going to ask you. No, you're not going to ask me. So pejorative.
Pejorative, isn't it kind of like a generalization?
It just means like negative, actually. Ooh, I gotcha.
Okay.
You're wrong. You might say like derogative, right? Is another word.
Derogative, yeah.
Demeaning?
It's kind of like something that belittles someone or something.
Belittle is kind of a hard word too, I think.
That's a harder word as well. It makes someone maybe feel small. That's like kind of belittle. Belittle is makes someone feel small. So like you do that by insulting them or by saying negative things about them.
Okay, so behavior of American citizens abroad. What does abroad mean?
Abroad means outside of one's country. So in this case, it'd be outside of the United States.
Great. So in this sense, how have people really understood you as an ugly American?
I just had an experience. I've had this happen a couple of times lately, and I don't know if it's probably somehow tied to our politics, I would imagine, but I've met like a couple people just while traveling this year that I've told them, I've like started a conversation with them. They've noticed maybe in another language or something that I'm not from there. And they ask me where I'm from and I say America, and they basically like end the conversation really quickly.
It's happened to me a lot too.
It's not like super common, but it's happened a couple of times where I'm just like, what the fuck? There's not really another way to say it than like, what the fuck? Which by that, I just mean like, okay, you're going to like completely generalize about me based on the fact that I said I'm American before you actually get to know who I am as a person. Or I don't know if it's based in politics to see what my political opinions are.
Yeah, something happened to me actually. I was commenting to you about this when we were planning the podcast, but I was in a bar in Mexico, and this woman was singing a Red Hot Chili Peppers song with perfect English, right? And so I just thought she was American. And I'm like, oh, are you American? And she just flipped her lid. What does flip her lid mean? To flip your lid?
It means that you get like really angry. You kind of explode.
Yeah. So the lid is like the top on something, right? So to flip it, I don't really understand the expression, but she flipped her lid and she exploded on me and she was really angry. How would you think I'm American? United States is horrible. Americans are horrible. And it was like kind of traumatic, actually.
A traumatic experience for you. So you start saying you're from Canada?
I just couldn't believe that she was just such a bitch about it. Pardon my French.
Well, I think anyone that like that gets angry about being, you know, just generalizing, if you get angry about someone calling you American or calling you French or whatever, wherever you're from or not from, that's a very ignorant way of thinking, because that's saying like, oh, all Americans are like this way. But we'll talk more about that after we go through some more of these stereotypes. So I think something that happens a lot is kind of the physical stereotypes I hear a lot. And with like this also ties into the food. So something I hear a lot about, for example, here in Spain, or actually like in Brazil too, because the food's really good. Brazilian food is amazing. Food here in Spain, the Mediterranean cuisine is amazing. And people tend to think of like, oh, you must love the food here because like American food's so greasy and disgusting. And what's the reality of that, Justin? Like what is real American food?
Well, I mean, you have the greasy and disgusting stuff. I mean, fast food is a big part of American culture. It's the part that's exported the most, but people don't really appreciate maybe some of the better food from the United States. I think it's a really big mixture, right? When I think about American food, I think about, because Hispanic culture is a big part of the United States, because, you know, a big portion of the United States is kind of Hispanic, the Southwest. So I love like, you know, Tex-Mex, for example. That's American food.
Yeah. I mean, when people ask me, what's your favorite American food? I always say Mexican. Because it's like when I'm back home, the thing I always crave is going out for Mexican food, fajitas, enchiladas, like that kind of stuff, those typical dishes that are really common to eat in the US. And I would just say in general, American food isn't necessarily American food. American food is characterized by that fusion of different cuisines from all over the world, and that you can really find anything. You can find, you know, the most typical Italian, Chinese, but then you can also find Peruvian, you can find Brazilian, you can find Mediterranean, you can find something really specific, Indonesian, you know, if you're in a city, and you can find things that are blends of all those different kinds of cuisines. So I think that's something that makes American food really amazing.
Yeah, I think part of it, you touched upon this idea of like the melting pot. You know, the United States is known as a melting pot. So think about like a, I don't know, a pot, like a cooking pot that's being cooked, right? And so melting means like we're putting ingredients in and they're all melting into each other.
Exactly.
This mixture of cultures, this is probably one of the more positive things. But there definitely is the negative side to it as well. So I think Americans in general, scientifically, you know, we are fat, we are obese, right? Would you agree there?
Kind of. I mean, it's definitely a big health concern and a big problem in the US. And I think it's something that the US government and the US needs to take it more seriously in general. But at the same time, I mean, you lived in Colorado. I'm from Colorado and like spent almost my entire life there, is like the state with the lowest obesity. So like my background, I come from a place where people are extremely active and healthy and are very conscious about what they eat. There's a big culture now of eating organic food, which I know is growing all over the world, but it's huge in Colorado. So I think when you look at that, again, it's like you can't stereotype, because Justin and I, Washington is like this as well, that we both come from places that people are very active and obesity isn't, it exists, but it's not really a big problem like it is in other parts of the US.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're talking about now, this duality of the United States, this is something people need to recognize. It's becoming more and more common. You see like kind of Obama and Trump, they're kind of like two ends of the spectrum. In the same sense, it's like the American population. You have like this really liberal, forward-thinking, progressive part of the United States. You know, people doing yoga, people going to protests, people with an international awareness, learning languages. And then on the other side, you have kind of the people on the couch watching TV, getting fat, and all the other stereotypes.
Yeah. I think like just to come back to like some of the physical things too, I think you were talking about a melting pot. And in the US, I think people think of Americans outside of the US, and they tend to think of maybe either the kind of football player type, like really tall and buff and probably white. What does buff mean?
Buff, like naked? I'm just kidding.
Wouldn't that be in the buff?
No, buff means we can use some different terms for this, but it's muscular, like ripped, jacked.
Exactly. You know, someone might think of someone like that. You obviously think of the ugly American as someone probably more like fat and maybe red because they're burnt by the sun wherever they're on holiday at. Or like you have...
They're probably wearing like a Hawaiian t-shirt, shorts with like socks up to their knees, right?
That's the stereotype here, I would say, because so many people come here just to go to the beach and get wasted, get very drunk. I think maybe this is a stereotype more in America, but like the WASP, we call it, which means white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. So the typical person whose ascendants came from England and...
Descendants, Mr. V.
Their descendants. I always get confused by that in the different languages. So their descendants came from England. And so they're that like kind of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, meaning that they have like British descendants. They're, you know, of Protestant background, Protestant Christian. And they're white. But like my background, for example, I'm not like the tall, buff football player at all. Justin is on the other end of the spectrum, that he's very tall.
And buff.
and buff.
Just kidding. I'm not very buff, actually, if you didn't know.
Too many questions, yes. And yeah, my background is Catholic and Jewish, so it's like very far from the Protestant and no British blood. I don't know about you.
I would say it's not just British, it's any Caucasian, any of like the kind of Western European white. And so this is, it's kind of like the symbol of privilege. There's kind of a big debate in the United States going around, you know, kind of racism and like privilege. It's people, WASPs generally hold a lot of like the power in the United States, a lot of the wealth. And so there's a really a big movement to diversify and to really make the United States a lot more diverse.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think that if we were to maybe change spectrum a little bit, I think that a big stereotype outside of the US, and just because of our history, especially the last maybe 20 years or so, 15, 20 years, we've just been constantly going to war, like just having to do with politics and stuff. So we've gotten this stereotype, which maybe is why people don't want to talk to us about just like causing different wars and being the world police, you also hear.
I think more than the past 20 years, like when I was at university, this is like 2000, 2001, I was, you know, taking geography classes. I was learning about the CIA's involvement in like every single country. And I was just totally amazed, appalled that the United States had its hand in like pretty much every election in every country in the United States. And the CIA was just everywhere, kind of like trying to spread capitalism or democracy, supposedly, even though they were undermining democratic processes that were electing communist officials.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking of like the Iraq war, because I think we got a really negative view on the outside of the United States during that time because our government alienated a lot of our allies, and we also dragged a lot of people to war with us. I know that kind of brought up a lot of negative feelings towards America and towards Americans during that time.
I think having like a symbol of the government, like Bush, for example, and now Trump, that definitely doesn't help things.
The more conservative. But I mean, Obama also, we were at war the whole time that he was president as well. So we can't just merely blame it on the conservatives, but they definitely have more of a reputation for pushing away some of our allies if they're not in line with what we want to do. And along the same lines too, I think people think that we're all obsessed with guns. It's like, how many guns do you have, Justin?
7. I mean, actually, I have 2 on each of my arms.
I've never even fired a gun.
Yeah, actually, my dad has some guns. I fired one in the kick. What does kick mean?
Is it the kick or the kickback?
Kickback. That's it.
It's like the, because guns are really powerful, and if you're not prepared when you fire it, it can like come back. I mean, I remember seeing a video of a girl who's like shooting a really big gun, and she fires it, and it like the kickback hits her in the face.
That's what happened to me, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Got a bloody nose?
No, it hit me in the forehead. So anyway, I mean, like the amount of guns in the United States, I think they're, I don't know what the number is, but it's like way higher than the rest of the world. I mean, there's, I don't know if it's like 2 guns per person or something, or 1.5 guns per person in the United States, but it's pretty absurd.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially it comes when we have international news, like last week with, there's the shooting in Las Vegas, and those kind of things don't happen very often in other countries. Like if you look at what happened here recently in Barcelona, that the terrorism was like really terrible. And that's been more common recently in Europe. But, you know, it's just like a single shooter going and just shooting complete strangers for less of a reason than like, I guess, the terrorists have for why they're doing it is for them. It seems really ridiculous that we still have guns legalized.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to the whole question. If you give people the tools with which to cause these problems or massacre people, then it's going to happen because some people go crazy.
For sure. I was just talking to my student about this, one of my students, because we were talking about the shooting in Las Vegas. And I think there's a lot of historical significance to it during the American Revolutionary War, that there was the problem that British soldiers would come and they would quarter people's houses, meaning that they would stay, they would come and they'd just say like, oh, I'm staying here. Oh, I'm going to eat your food. And they'd kind of just do whatever they want because Americans didn't have any way to defend themselves. And so I think that amendment really came, that law that you have the right to bear arms really came out of that. And people are really holding on to that tradition.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't really like thought about that side of it so much. So we're talking a lot about like negative stereotypes in the United States. The other side of the coin is that the United States really has a lot of really great characteristics. So what are some of those, Ethan?
we have like really nice big cars, which are very comfortable. That'd be another negative one, I think, that really recently, especially, is that Americans don't care about the environment. Most of you probably have that one. I think that Justin and I are a little bit more recycling and using less resources. We don't even own cars.
But there's a big portion of the United States that's actually like pushing clean energy forward, right? So for example,
definitely,
you know, Tesla, the world's first like electric car, although it was invented by Elon Musk, I don't think it was invented by him, but he pretty much created the company, Tesla, that's bringing it to mass adoption. I mean, that's an American company.
He's innovating the technology. And I would say, I mean, I know Elon Musk isn't American. I mean, he wasn't born in America, but he's pretty American. I think he's kind of like the quintessential, maybe positive stereotype of an American, as far as that.
Even though he's not American, but he does have the American spirit, though. The spirit of expansion, of innovation, right?
Exactly. I mean, I could think of another example like that, like Arianna Huffington. She wasn't born in the U.S., but she still considers herself, even though she has a very strong Greek accent, I think she considers herself very American because she spent such a large part of her life there and all of her success has come there. And, you know, all of us Americans originally came because of, you know, we came out of a background of being from another country, but then coming to the United States and building our family there, building businesses. So it's kind of like that hardworking attitude, that can-do attitude, that you can do anything that you believe in. And the very common, what's come out of this is the American dream, right? What's the American dream?
Well, you can interpret the American dream in different ways, right? But it's, I think it's that social mobility. It's being, you know, poor and moving up in the world to getting that job. It's kind of like it changes with the period in time. You know, post-World War II, I think, was this big era of abundance in the United States. And so it became this white picket fence. What is that, Ethan?
I mean, very typical. You probably have seen in American movies where someone has a house and then they have like the very green lawn, so the grass, and then around it, they have this white fence.
And so it's like this big increase in the middle class in the United States, the creation of like suburbs, which are areas outside of the city that have like these big neighborhoods. And you probably see this in movies because it's such a big part of like Hollywood pop culture that's being exported to the rest of the world. It's kind of like the dream of other countries too. And maybe this is just like the essence of a middle class in some sense. Yeah, so that's sort of changing in some sense. But I think another really important thing about the United States is the spirit of like innovation, expansion. And the fact that the United States started on the East Coast and, you know, 500 years ago, over 500 years ago. And it's just been this constant expansion for hundreds of years, expanding to the West, expanding, expanding. And you see that spirit of like the cowboy who's like kind of a rebel. The cowboy who is opening up into new frontiers. And that's kind of like settling these new lands, pioneering these new lands. But at the same time, there is a destruction involved. And like, for example, Native Americans, you know, this kind of genocide that happened in the United States that over a period of a couple hundred years, it was just horrible. But at the same time, it's still that spirit of expansion and innovation, which you see today in like Steve Jobs, you know? Well, I mean, Steve Jobs passed away.
Or I was going to say, or like Elon Musk is another really good example of that, you know, he's basically, like I was saying, on the very positive end of this, like creating very new technologies, trying to solve some of the world's biggest problems, like the building electric cars so that we're not using up so many of the resources, causing so much pollution, trying to basically build the first spaceship that will take people to Mars, to colonize Mars in case, you know, we do destroy our Earth. We have like a plan B, I guess is his idea with that, which is overly simplifying his idea with that. But I can post a really interesting article about him that both Justin and I really ate up in Wait But Why, which is one of our favorite blogs.
We talked about artificial intelligence before, right? And this was, you know, maybe like 20 or 30 episodes ago. You can look for that. I think it's like 130 or something, maybe before that. But it's like we ran out of land to really colonize the Earth. And so now intellectually, we're colonizing the stars and we're colonizing like possibilities of the future. And so really, Silicon Valley, that's a representation of that American spirit of entrepreneurship, of, you know, building a better future, of really attacking these problems.
Yeah. We talked like also several episodes back about like startups, which I think this idea came out of the United States, out of really out of Silicon Valley. It became very popular. this idea that like you can start your own company. And like if you have some dream, you have some idea, then it's very simple. And even with very little money or with no money, you can make it a reality. It's possible to like get other people to invest in your ideas. And if you're willing to work hard, then you can make it a reality. So I think that's one of the things I appreciate most about having that background, that American background, having that kind of like that attitude of a dreamer and that hardworkingness, that can-do attitude.
I think one important thing that comes out of this in entrepreneurism, I think you would definitely agree here. I think this permission to fail and this just recognition that like, you know what, it takes time. I'm going to fall on my face. And that's part of the process. And you see this in entrepreneurism. I definitely have seen this comparing Brazil to the United States. It's like when you fail in the United States, people appreciate your failure. And it's more of a question of like, okay, what did you learn? Whereas in Brazil, you have all this social pressure to be perfect. And so it's the same thing in English. If you step outside to speak English, it's like people have this expectation that it should be perfect. In the United States, it's more of a question. People realize that it's a, you know, perfection or competence really is at the end of a road of failure.
I think it's like very similar here. In Europe in general, there's kind of a more traditional mindset. And so people are more, they lean more towards doing what's kind of safe and stable, you know. And I think in Brazil, that's kind of that a similar mentality as well of not taking a risk, but like getting a normal job that has a good salary and climbing the ladder, right?
And I think this goes back to really this whole idea of like, okay, where is the attention placed on what other people think in some sense? Because you can care about what society thinks, what your family thinks, what people around you think. That can be a really driving force in your life. Or it takes courage really to step outside of that and to really trust your own gut.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like a lot of these characteristics. They have both a positive side and a negative side. I think that individualism of being able to go out and do your own thing, being able to take a risk like that and being willing to fail as long as you're learning or trying to build something worthwhile, you know. And on the other hand, that kind of individualism that can maybe come across as cold, it can come across as arrogant in the negative side, or we talked about that hardworkingness, you know, on one side, it can be that can-do attitude. And on the other side, sometimes it can be seen as, you know, obsession with like, you only care about work, you don't care about family, you don't care about friends. So if you have to be very careful, I think with all of these stereotypes. We'll do another episode more in general, just talking about stereotypes. But I think it's really important to recognize that stereotypes rarely are true. They're just generalization. And you need to actually not come at it like, oh, I don't want to talk to that person because they're from that country. But like actually being more experimental, like curious, asking a lot of questions and stuff to actually find what is the truth, you know, to crack open that shell.
I think stereotypes, a lot of times it's like just seeing it as information. It's like, okay, this caricature exists, this idea, this meme of the United States exists, but not taking it as like the absolute truth, even recognizing that we have stereotypes about these different countries. Like you said, being curious and kind of like, then when you meet somebody from that culture, what do you think about this? You know, this is what people say. This is why I think those conversations about stereotypes are really interesting, because you can take the meme or the stereotype, the caricature, and then you can peel that back and just get a perspective on what's beneath that, what's really true.
So I think we can wrap up this podcast. And if you would like to share some of your American stereotypes, maybe if you have some funny ones that people tend to say in your country, or maybe stereotypes that people have about your own country, you can share them by commenting on the show notes of this page, where you also find all of the vocabulary, all of the links that we talked about. And so I highly recommend you go there to take your learning with this podcast to the next level. And that will be at reallifeglobal.com/USA. So let's wrap this up and these guys out of here.
It's been fun, Ethan. Thanks for being able to share this Americanness with the real life audience.
Yeah. And as you can see, Justin and I are maybe not the most stereotypical Americans. So living proof of what we talked about today. So you go ahead and with us. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.